to the Warrior Mindset Podcast. We are your guide as you make your way through life, getting better 1% every day. We believe that life is lived and true victory won through adversity. Nothing easy is ever worth it. We believe in the warrior ethos and support those that choose to walk that path.
Well, man, your wife messaged me over Christmas asking me what to get you.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, she was going to get you this book. She was just making sure it was worth it.
Sure.
I was like, yeah, it's a good book.
Yeah.
Outlive. The Science of Art and Longevity by Peter Attia.
Doctor.
That's right.
Attia.
What do you think? What do you think of Peter Attia? I mean, we obviously you're best friends.
Yeah. Oh, Pete and I. Well, so I was introduced to him through like Joe Rogan podcasts over the years, I assume.
Same.
And honestly.
Yeah, it was Joe Rogan.
Honestly, some of the podcasts that he'd been on, like, it was hard to listen to because he gets so deep.
Yeah, the details, man.
And I have no idea what he's talking about. So, you know, when she got me that book, and thank you for confirming the recommendation.
Yeah, it's a good one. All 597 pages of it.
Well, a lot of that is, I found out, index and notes.
Yeah, okay.
There's a lot of notes.
sometimes the best part's the notes.
Yeah, I think it was like 413 pages or something.
Yeah.
The readable ones. And a couple of things. One, I can't tell you the last time that I read a book cover to cover. Like, I read slow anyway, so, you know, but this was something that I took it as a, you know, I'd read 25 minutes at a time, did it every morning. Sometimes I would go for another 25 minutes or something. But it was, even though there are a lot of pieces in this book that were very clinical, and remember, we're not doctors. We have to, I just read a book once.
Stayed at a Holiday Inn.
There you go. It gets very clinical. And there are still some things that, like, you know, sometimes you have to Google what you're reading in order to figure out what the hell he was talking about still. However, what it did is now I feel like I could listen to one of those podcasts now and kind of like, I'm already kind of jump seated into to everything and I get where the premise comes from. And actually dude, I think when we were talking about this last week, I said I wanted to do a book report on Peter Attia.
Yeah. Well, here we are.
But
all its glory.
I'm gonna do an aside. What goes through my head is there's a musical from like the 70s called You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually a cartoon, but
it was,
but it was also a musical that I had been in, and they do a book report on Peter Rabbit. And so for the past week, all that's Peter been Rabbit in my head is that song of a book report on Peter Rabbit, Peter Attia. Anyway, I'll stop there because I know the entire song and it gets weird.
That's real weird.
Yeah. Okay. So Peter Attia
is the number one longevity doctor.
Yeah.
Charges $150,000 a year to be his patient.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Yeah.
Nuts. He wrote a book. Yeah. He's got a good podcast.
Yes. And I think that the main thing to take, or there are definitely main points to take from this, but the main thing from take away from it is he wasn't necessarily, I feel, trying to be totally prescriptive as far as like, didn't say, here's the workout regimen you should do. This is what all every single book ends up doing.
It's, they try to give you steps.
They give you science first, and then they tell you need to do this exactly this way.
Aren't they usually also selling a program?
Yes.
I mean, he's not necessarily selling becoming his patient.
No.
Because he's got enough.
I assume so, and there's probably like branches of it and everything, and you know, it actually put me through a rabbit hole. I started reading or listening to Tony Robbins has one on longevity as well.
Sure,
and you know, and it's a different type of premise.
Lots of ice baths.
Yeah.
Well, let's start by defining some things. And you sent a great link, and I'll put that link in the summary here. Yep. But I think it's helpful, and that's why I like this link right away. I think it's helpful when thinking about Peter Attia's approach to health in his book to sort of put some things in context. Lifespan is the number of years you live.
Right.
Health span is how long you're healthy enough to do the things that matter to you.
Yeah. You want me to explain that from what I understand? Or do you
in one second.
Okay.
Longevity means maximizing health span and lifespan. Mm-hmm. Your goal should be to live longer and live better.
Right.
It starts with prevention.
Yeah.
God damn.
Yeah, I know. And you know, because he goes into the lives of centenarians. Those are people that are over 100 mm-hmm. years old. And the thing that kind of comes out of it, and I was talking to chiropractor yesterday.
Chiropractor.
And chiropractors, whether you believe in chiropractic medicine or not, they really do work on, you know, being a little, I mean, obviously there are adjustments and everything, but the whole point, I think, of chiropractor to me, and when I'm talking to her, is to be, you know, working on the preventative pieces in order to,
sure.
You know, and so that's what this entire book is about.
Yeah.
It's how do I, there's going to be a certain number of people that are going to live to 100.
Yeah.
You know, minus the bus accident, because that's in their genes. And so his premise was like, okay, well, if you aren't lucky enough to have those genes, how, you know, what are the things that you could do to get you closer to that?
Right.
And then the whole, you know, second premise of that is you don't want to get to that, you know, 100 mark being broken and,
yeah,
and feel like shit.
Yeah.
You want to get to that 100 mark. And that's the whole health span versus lifespan.
Right.
And so you want to be healthy during this time as much as possible. And so, you know, I'll say that.
It's like I don't know if you've seen it on Instagram. There's like a 70-year-old dude in an iron lung. It's like, yeah, he's still living, but yes, like, is he really? Yeah,
exactly. No, do you want to be able to breathe? Do you want to be able to move? Do you want to be able
those
to,
are basics. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the whole clinical part of this that sets everything up is going through and talking about the four horsemen of diseases.
We get into those.
Yeah.
I like one of the things I like that he did, and I got this from, it might have been Rogan, whatever. We're talking about medicine 2.0 and medicine 3.0.
Yes.
Where medicine 2.0 is mostly what we all experience is that doctors are dealing with problems,
yep,
mostly symptoms of things as they appear to you.
Yeah.
Whereas medicine 3.0 is all about prevention.
Yeah.
And it is keeping you out of the doctor's office to begin with.
Right. And the way the chiropractor put it yesterday was basically sick treatment or sick medicine is what the medicine is now. It's all very, it's reactive.
Yeah.
And I think half the things that we've talked about on here are how to be proactive instead of reactive.
Yes, usually.
And so this falls definitely within there that you know, yeah, if you're going to a doctor because you have a lump, if you're going to a doctor because you can't breathe well, you broke a hip, you know, you can't remember things, then you're going for sick care.
Yeah.
And you're not going for health care. That was it. Sick care versus health care is how she put it. And
well, if we're talking about it, making our health span longer.
Right.
Yeah, then that definitely health care.
Right. And so
it's mislabeled as it currently sits.
Yes, it is definitely sick care. And so his whole medicine 3.0 is really about what health care should be, which is preventative, which is and you know, and I do not know the industry well, but I would say that, you know, a lot of sick care, we're gonna call it that, is based on insurance and what insurance is going to pay.
Isn't it weird? It's not really weird.
That's not.
It's not really weird.
It's business.
It's how it is.
It is, and you know, and so it is. I would actually think for for insurance companies, that it would be more beneficial. And you see this every once in a while with an insurance company. It'd be more beneficial to be preventative and for them to give you incentives.
I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Well, I don't either as far as like the common sense of it. But you know, like I have one life insurance policy that I had to prove that I knew. I had to take a test on CrossFit, basically. And this was when I was doing a lot of CrossFit.
It's a weird one.
I remember
you telling me about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was actually Mutual of Omaha. You know, it's been around forever.
Yeah.
And somehow I got an ad or whatever it was, but I was shopping life insurance at the time, and the rates that I was seeing here were a lot lower for this particular one, even different than regular Mutual of Omaha or any of the other ones I was looking at. But it based it on basically like, I mean, it asked, you know, who it gave you multiple choice, like who are the top, you know, female, CrossFit athletes, what is this indie? And, you know, and basically you had to know those. It was like 50 questions or something, but it was enough to where like, yeah, you've been doing it for longer than a week.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And, And so, anyway, the whole point of that was if I could prove that I, you know, knew enough about CrossFit, then I probably did it. And that I was probably in a healthier category than somebody else my age.
Sure.
And so that insurance premium for term life compared to another one I had is so much less expensive and continues to stay that even after like 10 years than another one I have.
That's interesting.
It is. So I'm like, if you can think that way.
Yeah, we could get in.
Right. But Gene, like what he puts in here is about health and everything. But again, medicine 2.0 is really based on what an insurance company is willing to pay for something that's already happened to you is the point.
It's always treating a symptom.
Right.
You know,
and it's never, sometimes it might be the cure, but it's not the, you know, cancer started. It didn't start yesterday. That lump did not, come from yesterday.
A lot of stuff early.
Right.
That was like the guy's statement. It's better and easier to avoid the first heart attack than treat it after it happened. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Right. Right.
And in modern insurance, it's like it doesn't care about the potential of you having a heart attack.
No.
Right. It just cares about what they have to pay when you have one.
Right. And
counterintuitive.
Right. Every once in a while I've seen like healthcare, I think, like my wife had one that was, you know, a few jobs back or whatever, and the healthcare that came out basically said, you know, we'll pay for your gym membership. And you know, to me that was incredibly smart because technically people who exercise and
100%
and eat healthier, you know, are more likely to not have as many healthcare issues. Mm-hmm. It's kind of science and facts.
Yes, it is.
And if that's what insurance is based off of, health insurance, life insurance, and actuarial tables and everything of when they think you're going to die or get hurt or get sick, then it all makes sense to me. Why, as an insurance company, would you not push towards that? But that's not what this book is about.
Yeah, it's not insurance reform. Well, let's talk about the four horsemen.
Yep.
You mentioned it. There are four major killer diseases, according to Peter Attia, the four horsemen. Cardiovascular disease.
Heart.
Cancer.
Yep.
Neurodegenerative disease.
Yes.
And then type 2 diabetes and metabolic dysfunction. Mm-hmm. I've only recently started hearing, that's a lie, because they've said it in the CrossFit world forever. Like metabolic disease.
All right.
I think we got a big dose of that hearing about it over COVID.
Correct.
Because it's like the number one comorbidity to COVID or anything else was metabolic disease, which is, let's just say it, being fat.
Right. I was going to try to think.
It's a nice way to say overweight.
Yeah, but morbidly overweight, and that it affects so much more than just you walking around. Mm-hmm. It affects your blood. It affects everything.
Yeah, and you know, it's. I mean, cardiovascular disease is definitely helped by working out,
right?
I don't know about cancer. I don't know shit about cancer other than it ain't good. I know neurodegenerative diseases can also be helped by working out.
Yes.
And then, of course, metabolic disease.
Right. It's kind of
literally cured by working out.
Right. For the most part, yes. Unless you have type 1.
Well, yeah. That's actually not as... I mean, it's kind of rare, isn't it?
It's rarer.
Rarer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yes, most of the people who have diabetes now have type 2. And
so I'll insert his... I found a short with him now.
Yeah.
What made you start to lose faith that diet and nutrition were the answer?
Well, I think it's important to differentiate between a couple of things. So I definitely don't want what I've written or what you've correctly interpreted to imply to people that I don't think nutrition is important, right? What I'm really saying is nutrition is an asymmetric input to the equation, if we want to think about it technically, meaning it has far more downside if you get it wrong than it has upside if you get it right.
That's interesting.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So getting it wrong will really hurt you. Getting it right, it's not going to make you live to 200.
That's right. I mean, first of all, I don't think anything will, but yes, that's the right idea. No, absolutely not. So if you get it wrong, and let's be clear, we are living in a case study of getting it wrong.
Will not help you live to 100. Like diet, and I'm sure you got this from the book, but diet and nutrition alone is a big portion of it, but it's not all there is. You also have to work out.
Yeah.
And I mean, I coach a lot of people on that. Like, you come here for the working out portion, mm-hmm. and here are your benefits. Mm-hmm. We're going to help you cardiovascularly. We're going to help, you know, all the stuff around that. We're going to help you, like, neurologically. We're going to help your mind-body connection.
Right.
Along with that is diet and nutrition.
Yep.
And I often will coach them to do one or the other first. Like, in generally speaking, not try to do both at the same time. For your average person who hasn't done anything ever, at least in the past 10 years, mm-hmm. you know, they come in, they're zero sum, they're looking to change their life. It's usually one of the two,
yeah.
in my opinion. If they choose diet and nutrition first, often I'm like, let's just start you walking and doing some light calisthenics
right.
for a while until we get you to a certain point. If they start with the workout portion first, well, we go into that
right.
and then sort of back into what might be bad habits or things later. Because often I see that, like, those bad habits are like drinking soda, smoking, mm-hmm. you know, drinking too much booze.
Right.
Like, those are habits that we're fighting, like staying up way too late.
Yep.
And like, those are the habits you're fighting on that side of the coin.
All right.
All that to say is, it was good to be like redeemed a little bit by all the things I've read and heard from Peter Attia saying similar things.
Yeah. Well, how about this, as a gym owner? And I think I'm correct on this, and just, I meant to bring the book with me, but my wife has it right now.
Well,
share it.
It's a big one.
74% of people, I think it's in the U.S., out of 330 million, do not work out. Do not exercise.
Yeah, I believe it. I 100% believe it.
That's, you know, over mm-hmm. 200 and what, 60, 70 million people.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought it would be that high.
It's pretty high.
I get that. But you think about the entire exercise industry.
I don't need to see numbers like that, because I see the direct to my little gym.
Yeah.
The direct appointments made versus appointments kept ratio.
Right.
And it is like appointments made 100, appointments kept 2.
Yeah.
Like, that's the ratio.
Yeah.
And it, like, and I know what that is, because, you know, of the two that I meet, I'll sign up 0. Like, I have to meet like 100 in order to sign up like 2. I know what it is, because I've talked to some of them.
Mm-hmm.
It is just outright, for lack of a better term, laziness mm-hmm. and lack of desire to get started.
Yeah.
Or fear, whatever words you want to use, there's this, whatever that psychology is that keeps them from getting going.
Yeah.
I believe those numbers 100%. I don't even need to see. I can just look at my own experience from what I see.
It really did shock me, though, seeing if that was...
Sometimes I think I should open a chicken biscuit store
right next
in my space. Gym. No, in my space, oh, instead
right.
of a gym.
Right.
Yeah. I would have way more money.
This is true. And right next to Bojangles.
Even then, it wouldn't matter.
It wouldn't matter.
It wouldn't matter.
Yeah, it's still...
But think about, man... Think about all the case morbidities that you can have at any given point from, you know, being born to when you die, all the things, including cancer, having metabolic disease, being fat, out of shape,
right,
will kill you,
right?
Like so much faster than either one by themselves. Right. Like, it's just crazy. Like my dad had, he fought cancer, multiple myeloma for a decade. Mm-hmm. And then it eventually turned into leukemia. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't care how fit you are. Leukemia is bad. But
blood is at that point, yeah.
I 100% believe that it was his level of fitness that is what made him last as long as he lasted.
Yeah.
Because he had that old school farmer.
He was a stubborn son of a bitch, wasn't he?
Yeah. But like
in a good way,
that really added to it, though,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, he broke his back like 20 or so years ago and he recovered in just like, I mean, after back surgery, he recovered in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And I know people in the gym that are relatively fit, younger, they'll have, I mean, not broken. They'll have like a slipped disc. It'll take them a month or two to recover.
It took me a long time to recover from rupturing.
Yeah, and he was in incredible shape. Mm-hmm. He was incredibly strong.
Yeah,
you know, and I think that was 100% responsible for his longevity
with
cancer.
Not only that, but you know, something he goes into. I think it's on the neurological side. Sorry, not the neurological side, but the neurodegenerative. Degenerative disease.
Neurodegenerative. It's hard to say.
Basically Alzheimer's.
Came in a flash of inspiration as I was sitting at the funeral of the parent of a close friend of mine, realizing that in the last decade of this person's life who had died, they were, you know, largely debilitated physically. That's what gave me this idea of we need to treat life just as we would treat an athletic event. So periodization is a strategy of shifting the focus of training for, you know, a finite period of time to make improvements in other areas. What happens if you are under a lot of psychological stress, you push too hard in a workout, you get injured, is that going to make your stress better or worse? It's going to make it significantly worse. Ultimately, I think the simplest tool is, what is your heart rate in the morning? How much do you want to train? And more than anything else, what happens to you when you are doing your activity? If you are getting a hard time getting your heart rate to respond, you're probably overstressed.
I think it's in there because it talks about depression. And he's basically saying that, you know, one of the biggest sources of depression are not being able to move, and then goes into basically, you know, breaking a hip. And we've all heard about, you know, I mean, at our age, remember, I fall and I can't get up. It was kind of a joke in the 80s, but in the more I've thought about it and the older I've gotten, you know, breaking a hip now is basically a death sentence. It can be.
Well,
because
for a certain age person,
for a certain age person
who's not in good enough shape.
Yeah. Right. And you know, and that's, you know, if you read this, you'll get to, there's a whole chapter on stability.
Yeah.
That's not just the working out part. It's you know, how to do stability type exercises so that, you know, you're less likely to fall.
Look, man.
Or you catch yourself before you fall, before you break something. And
what is it? Is it Amazon or Netflix that has the whole series on blue zones? Blue zones are like
I think
places on Earth where people live.
Netflix, yeah.
And like the number one, I'm not mistaken, I'll give you a dollar if I'm wrong, but the number one, I think, was Okinawa. Longest living blue zone or whatever. And they all practice karate.
Right.
Like that's the national.
You were going there.
You knew I was going there. But it's not just like the, you know, that's not fighting, but it's like the things you do in that practice. It helps that mind-body connection. And I think it's very important.
Yeah.
As you get older, to keep that mind-body connection.
It is. And so, you know, kind
but
of.
But I see it, man. I see it in some older people that, I see it in some older people that have bad things happen to them. Look, bad things happen to you or those around you as you get older.
Right.
Right. You lose people. You lose things.
Yeah.
Life probably, I mean, I'm not there yet. I'm not 70, but like, it's not the most exciting. You know what I mean? There's a lot of things to be sad about.
Mm-hmm. I had actually somebody close to me said that people don't see me anymore.
Yeah. Right. It's a legit thing.
Yeah.
And then the older you get, you know, you're treated a certain way. Mm-hmm. And anyway, there's a lot of reason to be sort of depressed. And then that can lead to not doing things with other people, not communicating.
Right. Right.
And then you can become the person that just like sits in their recliner and watches Fox News all day yelling at the TV. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you know, you've done that for, I mean, think about it. Like you've gone through period. I mean, you work out pretty regularly. You've gone through periods of time, like let's say a month or so where you haven't worked out.
Yes.
Or 2 weeks.
Yep.
You feel like shit, right?
Yeah.
You can, I mean, I've had everything. Well, I've not worked out. I've gone places where I'm just sitting in a room for 3 or 4 days and you almost have flu-like symptoms.
Yeah.
Like you have like headache and your sinus, like you just get, you feel gross and you begin to get achy because your body expects you to do things. Mm-hmm. Imagine that feeling after 2 years.
Yeah.
You know.
You've been
let's just
there.
Pick a number from 70 to 72.
When we were both younger at different times,
yeah,
you were like that and I was like that.
But think about that, 2 years of that,
yeah,
and then you fall.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You're talking about a death sentence though. Then you fall. Death sentence, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to recover from that.
Yeah.
Because you got to fight through recovery and getting in shape again.
Right.
That's bad.
Yeah.
That's hard. It's hard enough to get in shape in the first place.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I felt like that.
It seems obvious.
It does, but you don't notice it. I mean, as much as, you know, now that I work out at, you know, what was it, 2 weeks into the year, I started traveling again. I traveled for 2 weeks in a row and I got out of my normal routine because I think I told you, I got to New York and it was the first time they had snow that stuck in like 2 years. Mm. And I got out of the Uber and I was like, you know, like, this is why I moved away from New England, to get away from this stuff. And I ran once on a treadmill that week and that was it. And I was like, what am I doing? And, you know, and then, you know, eating with my team and things like that. And then the next week I went to California and dude, I ran just about every day, but I still felt off and I wasn't doing the things I normally do. I went snowboard or skiing, you know, that coming weekend, but something in there like got me off of my normal routine to where like I've gained 10 pounds since then. And, and there's just part of me that like part of it is like I started slowing down on the exercise and continuing the same amount of food.
Exactly. Well, it's a section here on exercise. Because I haven't read the book
right
front to back. I mean, I've read parts of it from, you know, things posted on the internet. I've watched a lot of his podcasts. I've known of Peter Attia for a good 3 or 4 years now. You are the expert in terms of reading the book. One of the best parts that I get the sense of is the putting it all together section where it's like we have all this data and all this research and stuff about healthcare and of the approach, but then it's when he starts to put it together. And I think those are the best parts of those podcasts and things. And I think that's where it's got the gold.
Yeah.
And he does have this section on, the way he exercises, I guess. And, I'm curious to ask you how you do exercise, but real quickly, he says weekly, weight training 3 days a week, zone two cardio 3 days a week, VO2 max training 1 day a week. So that's like, you know, lifting weights 1 day, 3 days. Zone two would be like jogging.
All right. I've got his
3 days. VO2 max is like a high intensity workout 1 day a week.
Yep. He's got 10 minutes of stability, 60 minutes of zone two. 60 minutes of upper body strength.
That's right.
Well, for me, that'd be Sundays. Mondays, and everything is 10 minutes stability. Then 60 minutes lower body strength. Next day, zone two, 60 minutes. Upper body strength, 60 minutes. zone two. And so he goes off, and then there's some days where he combines. And I put that in my Asana to see if I could emulate it. And
well, that's what I was going to get at. Did it change the way you approach working out any?
The problem is I like to run a little bit more than that.
Right.
And I think he does a lot of biking now and,
I think he's a little bit older than we are.
No, he's 50.
Oh, is he 50? Yeah. Okay.
So technically he's older, just by a couple of months.
There you go, old bastard.
But I will say that, within the book, he doesn't necessarily go into his training there's exercise and there's training.
Right.
And something that he's very specific in is just don't go fucking exercise.
Yeah.
You know, his thing is train
for
something, even if it's training for life, putting some type
of training program. I like the way that these notes put it, thinking about the marginal decade. Right. You want to intentionally train for the activities you care most about doing into your later years.
Right.
Build up the strength and stamina while young to combat the predictable decline as you age.
Yeah.
So it kind of summed it up as want to ski at 80? Well, you should be in the top 1% at 50.
Right.
He's not kidding.
Yeah. No. And it's setting yourself up. I think he called it the centenarian Olympics or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, 80. That's a,
hey,
but still.
But he's,
we should live. I mean, barring the first, three of those four horsemen.
Right.
We should live to be 80, somewhere around there. I mean, given the way things are going, don't you, we started off with, don't you want to be doing some, I still want to be doing jujitsu when I'm 75.
I just want to be moving. That's what I've told you before. I just want to be able to move. I want to be able not to be flat on my ass.
Yeah. I want to be sparring. Back. I want to be doing things.
Yeah.
Still teaching martial arts. And I mean, I want to be doing those things. So you got to train for it now.
You do. And so training versus exercise is one thing in there I remember. And the other thing is that he kind of goes into, because you know, nutrition is kind of next. But he goes into the fact that all of the studies that he's putting in this book and that he's pointing to basically say that strength exercise is the single most important thing that you can do in order to live longer, because it sets you up for more muscle tone over time. And so that's the, when you're 50, you better have this much muscle tone. And then it's also bone density as well. So that when you're 80, when you retain something of what you are going to naturally lose no matter what.
Right. Of course.
And forget testosterone and things like that. It's just, muscle mass, bone density.
Well, I mean, to be specific, if you're supplementing testosterone, the moment you stop supplementing testosterone, it goes away immediately. So, that's not a, as far as I'm concerned, that is not a sustainable practice.
No.
Because you literally have to do it.
Keep going.
Yeah. Forever. And that's not sustainable if you are sick or in the hospital.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, it's supplementary.
Right.
It's not supplementary. It is replacement.
Right. Correct. For what? Yeah.
I had a conversation with someone. They were asking me about Ozempic. Mm-hmm. This gentleman's having trouble losing weight and stuff, and he was asking about Ozempic. And I was like, well, have you read any of the literature that's on the internet about Ozempic, that you will have to take Ozempic forever?
Right. Pretty much.
And the moment you don't, they are seeing extreme replacement of weight, not just going back to where you were.
Right.
They're seeing you getting fatter.
Right.
Well, so it's just like steroids. People take.
That is just like exercise. I told you I stopped exercising as much and I ate the same amount. Yeah. And then, then I was screwing myself over.
Yep. That is if you don't have any of the, 30 to 40% of what people experience.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Diarrhea, heart issues,
right.
Lung issues,
one way to get
stomach issues. Blood issues.
Right. Grip strength is also one of
I thought that was interesting that was a good identifier of your ability to live.
Yes. And
it makes sense.
It does. It does, because it shows how much you put into it. And since I've been running more, my grip strength has gone down.
Yeah.
I can feel I did boxing this morning, but I did weighted exercises yesterday. And dude, I was like, oh, like, this feels heavier than it normally does. And
like dumbbells.
Yeah. And, yeah.
Jiu-jitsu is a great one.
Yeah.
For grip strength. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't care what you think. It's a great one.
Not me.
I'm not picking like on
people
you.
People on the internet. but basically that like cardio is definitely part of what you should be doing according to this. But also, you know, I thought it was interesting that he started talking about zone two. It's cardio, but it's zone two endurance, basically.
Yeah.
Zone that could two. Be on a bike. That could be running. That could be rowing, whatever it is.
Zone two is that like where if you're jogging, you can speak to each other without being out of breath, whatever that level is for you.
Right. And
for an hour.
Like yesterday I was running without, you know, breathing through my mouth at all. So
it's a good way to do it.
And it's tough.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. It's tough. And that was only for like 20 minutes. I did an 8 mile this weekend and I try to keep it in, you know, zone two for, you know, unless I'm trying to get it to a race or whatever. But the whole point of that is what I learned before I read this book on zone two was the more that you can train your body to be in zone two as you're doing endurance, then next year at this time, like if I'm running and my pace is like at zone two, it's like an 8 minute mile.
Yeah.
Then next year at this time, if I'm running at a zone two for the same, you know, heartbeat per minute, basically, that
should be below eight.
It should be below eight.
Right.
Seven.
Whatever. Yeah.
Seven or whatever. If you train like that, and you know, actually,
that's funny.
Nike running. You know, that's how I program my runs. You know, they don't necessarily talk about zone two training when running, but they do talk about like 80% of your runs should be easy runs.
Right.
And,
makes sense.
And recovery runs, and only 20% of your runs are like,
right,
get your ass out there and run as fast as you can, or you know, what, if it's a fartlek or
that's how we train fighting too. Yes, we train. I've got a guy who has he's got a fight coming up, and you know we're ramping it up for him, because he's, you know, it's a short period of time, but only for like 2 weeks. But overall, when you're sparring and training, you want to be playing, not going 100%.
Right.
Exactly. You can't maintain that over. You have injuries and
all right.
Like that, I think is what you're saying. If you go out and run marathons every day.
Right. Well, and you know, and the funny thing is like, you know, the whole philosophy of like when you're, well, first there's the, when you're ready to be a student, the teacher will come. But also, you know, when you're, you know, looking at all this stuff, then things you start to notice more things around you.
Yeah.
And coming from California, I just happened to be on my flight to Salt Lake City. It's with a 56-year-old dude that runs marathons. And I had the book that I was reading.
He's like, bruh.
Well, he wasn't even looking at that. I forget what we were talking about. I looked at his shoes. I was like, hey, you know, I don't remember what they were now, Saucony or Saucony or Brooks or something.
I don't know.
I was like, either. You know, like, are those comfortable? Because I've thought about running in those before. Yeah. And so we started talking. Next thing I knew is, like, I was planning on going to sleep or reading the damn book during that time. And I never talked to people on planes. Next thing I knew, we're having, you know, like a 2.5-hour conversation on, I asked him every fucking thing I could think of. Like, well, what do you supplement with? How often do you run? How do you do it in Salt Lake City? How are you a marathon runner? He's like, well, the snowplow goes out and then I run after the snowplow. And
makes sense,
you know, and like anyway. So it was amazing. Like all these. Oh, and then when I was in California, I just like, we did a fun run one day with some of the employees that were there. And like, you know, three of the people, like, there are only six of us. Three of the people decided to kind of hang back and couldn't keep up with, you know, I was like, you can't keep up with my pace? Shit. Okay. Oh, that's cool. You know, like no, I was not judging at all, but I was really surprised. And then me and two other dudes, I'm like, I'm running with them. One guy is a marathon runner. And the other guy's an ultra marathon runner.
Oh, man.
And I'm looking at him going,
like, guys,
I'm like, how long are we going?
Yeah, guys.
But while we're running, and, you know, I'm like, I like 5Ks.
Yeah.
While we're running, like, I just kept talking to him and I was asking the same thing. And so thank you and my wife, because reading this book has now like filled all of, you know, all these things are just coming to me as far as like you're information that I had questions about anyway. Yeah. And they're coming through and I'm like, you know, I'm like asking people's paces and things like that. And, you know, because, and I think I told you when I ran 10 miles 2 weeks ago, it was like it took a wrong turn at Albuquerque. Or
you did. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, you did.
Yes, I did. But I had not, I was planning on running like 3 miles that day. And then I just kept going. And it was because I was like,
all right,
you know, talking. Yeah, I know. And then I could just keep running. But because like this started getting to my head, I'm like, oh my God. And then next thing I knew, I was like, I ran 10 miles. Like, I remember doing that once, you know, when I was 30.
You're in the zone, so to speak.
So the whole point of that was cardio is important. Zone two is important in order to continue to make your heart work more efficiently, is how I understand it. But that strength training is still more important for keeping, again, look at the book, as far as keeping you to where you're less likely to break down later on.
That's why I've always liked CrossFit.
Yeah.
And I will say I like the CrossFit methodology.
Yeah.
I like responsible, safe CrossFit. You and I have been to a lot of, we've been to a handful of CrossFit gyms together.
We have
trained at some, all with some of the same country. People.
Yes.
And, you know, CrossFit, I think can get a bad rap because, you know, there are people that have injuries from it. I think it's usually self-inflicted, but I like the methodology of mixing those things.
Yeah.
You know, mixing the times that you train in, mixing the things that you do, the different aspects of fitness, and we'll get into all that, but that's why I like that, because you can fit a half marathon in your week of working out, and it fits because of the variants in the methodology. I think it's a really good choice. I think ultimately it's what probably we should all be doing to some degree, but whatever you want to call it.
Varying things.
Yeah, the sport, whenever you start getting competitive and rolling in the sport aspect of it, it gets kind of stupid.
But,
So there's this little bit about diet questions, and this is really cool way to think about it, the way he's broken it down. And I think it's pretty smart. Are you undernourished or overnourished?
Yeah.
And that is something, like, these are ways, this has changed how I'm going to, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Intake people as I'm asking questions. Stuff.
Yeah.
But by asking them questions, and we're trying to get to the heart of, are you undernourished or overnourished? Mm-hmm. Are you under-muscled or adequately muscled? Are you metabolically healthy or not? And that's confusing, I think, to a lot of people, because you can be one of these things. Like, if you think of it on a spectrum, you can be one of them and still be out of shape on the others.
Yeah.
Like, I know people who've come into the gym to work out alongside me, and they're ripped.
Yeah.
But they last about 20 seconds in the workout, and then they just fucking die.
Yeah.
And I'm like, bruh.
Yeah.
Like, I thought you know, you told me you work out all the time. You're ripped. Like, you got good muscle tone. Like, but, you know, this person probably doesn't sleep well, right? They're probably not hydrated properly. Mm-hmm. All they do is go in and slowly lift weights for 3 hours at a time.
Yep.
They've never used their fitness. You know what I mean? Never put it into practice. On the other hand, I've seen people who can come in, they look like, you're like, I mean, you don't look like you're necessarily in shape, but they slay a fucking CrossFit workout.
No, they just keep going because they can endure it.
Yeah. And it's like, well, like, anytime you go on a run, there's always that, like, that 160-year-old little fat guy that is like running a full on marathon when you're dying trying to run 2 miles.
Yeah.
Like, there's always that guy.
I mean, go on a 5K, Gene.
Yeah. You see
You'd be surprised who passes you.
Yeah.
You're like, damn it.
Yeah. The mom pushing the buggy in that's you know,
yeah,
6 weeks postpartum or whatever, and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't mean you're in shape, like, all over the spectrum.
Right.
You know, and that's what we want for, I guess, the health span to touch all those points. So are you undernourished or overnourished? Are you under-muscled, adequately muscled? Are you metabolically healthy or not? Mm-hmm. Meaning, can you do different domains of time and distance and things like that? Most have poor metabolic health, are overnourished, and are under-muscled.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's your 74%.
Yeah. And then thinking about diet, you want to reduce energy intake while adding lean muscle mass. It's a very simple approach.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what diet you're using. You know, you can do whatever, like any of them.
Yeah.
Like keto, Mediterranean, the Krispy two he cream. Likes. You could. What is it? Carnivore, be a vegan. It doesn't matter necessarily.
Calories in versus calories out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is if you're trying to
it is.
Lose weight.
Yep. That and calories equation. In, calories out, and calorie quality. I wouldn't want to go on the all
quality Krispy Kreme goes diet. To everything else too. Because you, I mean, there's the professor that did the Krispy Kreme, you know, ate his calories every single day for a month, and you know, but you know, your sugar levels are out, you know, you're diabetic at that point. And so yes, then it goes to quality of food and everything past that. You know, and I mean, actually in here, I think that he said something about keto and then Mediterranean, and I don't remember the keto from the book itself. I know that he used to do keto.
I've heard that in podcasts.
But
where he says he likes
the,
a large aspect of it.
Right.
Yeah.
And that he will put like, some patients on it in order to jumpstart.
But it's like anything in life, man. You get too far dogmatic about one thing.
That was why when I read this, I was like, this doesn't make sense. Because again, he was not trying to be very proscriptive. He was just trying to say that, you know, it comes down to, you know, eating
that keto diet approach to a diet can work for some people.
Right. And I think that, you know, he talked about you know, eating healthier fats is probably, you know, that was the only thing that he was prescriptive about. Avocados and extra virgin olive oil and like something else were the only things that were really put in there.
Yeah.
Oh, and protein. Protein, like,
yeah.
Like, if I'm 180 pounds, that I should be eating 180 grams, grams, yeah, whatever it is. Of protein in order to to put myself in a place that, you know, like, what is it, 90 would be right at a, you should have that. So if I'm 180, so 90 would be if I wanted to just, like, you know, be at a normal stasis area basically. But if you do double that, so basically 1 gram,
and well, it's,
I don't understand the metric system, but whatever it is, it's like I'm supposed to have 180, you know, so, and that you can metabolize. He said, don't do it. This is why he doesn't do intermittent fasting as much, because he couldn't get enough protein in.
Right, you can only metabolize 40. A certain amount.
Yeah,
he said, I thought it was 30 grams, but
I thought it was 2, and then I read
whatever
he said 40, and so, you know, like,
whatever,
go over, you know, 2 to 3 meals basically. And, you know, but that's what, but he used to do it. Like,
he talks a lot about, fasting as well.
Mm-hmm.
The importance of regular fasting.
Importance of regular fasting. I used to really do a lot of regular fasting, probably considered excessive by some. We did a 7 to 10 day water only fast once a quarter and a 3 day water only fast once a month. While there were clearly some benefits of doing that, it's very difficult to measure what's happening cellularly. The downside of doing that, by the way, is you're going to lose a lot of muscle mass. As much as you might exercise during those periods of fasting, which I tried to, you're just not going to be able to maintain lean mass. I was always sort of accumulating a little bit of a debt of lost muscle mass. And over a period of about 3 years, I probably lost about 10 pounds of lean mass.
He doesn't do it as much anymore.
Well,
what he says now is for his patients, he will put somebody on a fast who needs, again, a jump start.
Ah,
but this is where, like, he just found that he was not getting enough protein by fasting.
Sure, of course not.
And, well,
do you fast? I know you were doing.
I did
warrior diet.
I did a lot. No, I did a lot of fasting last year, and I will definitely find, like, right now, you know, I will probably fast this week. My wife's traveling.
Yeah,
it's easier, and it's not. Well, it's not because of her or anything. It's just like it's easier for me to just like,
yeah,
not have to worry about it,
right?
And not worry, you know, like get the kids fed or whatever.
Yeah,
it's just easier. So I'll do it for like 3 or 4 days at a time, and I'll do like a, you know, I'll my eating, I don't even talk about fasting anymore. It's my eating window.
Sure.
It's six to eight hours, you know, max.
Yeah.
And that does help me I need to restart right now based on how I'm feeling. And you know, even though I could run just fine, but you know, I'm like, damn, you know, like I'm again starting to gain weight, but you know, part of that has been, I've also been, you know, going back and doing more weighted exercises as well.
Yeah, you're going to be hungry.
And so I'm hungry. I'm gaining some muscle.
I think of it more as like, when I think of fasting, I think of it as literally skipping calories.
Yeah.
Like I'm skipping a meal to reduce my overall calorie intake.
Yeah.
That's what I think of.
Yeah.
I don't know if it helps anybody listening. Just keep it simple. But
well, that
there's a lot of complication on like what time to do it. Yeah. And I mean, if you're going to try to do it, do like skip the meal you can skip.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Now, there's a lot of science between like the length of time you're not eating calories and when certain things happen, hormones and things like that. You can get into that too. But
right. Well, I mean, and
for most of us, it's just you need to eat less calories.
You need to eat less calories.
Because you're overfed.
Because you're overfed. Exactly. but as far as like you should, I think one of the main things that you're saying is like, even if you're not fasting, just, you know, knock off eating a few hours before dinner or before you go to bed because of all the, you know, growth hormones and everything
happening
in your body when you're sleeping that you need to happen.
That's
but if you're still digesting, you know, because you ate 30 minutes ago and then you go to bed,
it's not
the same. Yeah. So stop smoking weed and having the munchies and going to bed right afterwards.
So one of the things we'll do is get somebody brand new and they're a little overweight. I have them write down everything they eat for the week. Like, don't lie to me. Yeah. I don't care what it is. I don't care if you eat a whole birthday cake. Put it in the journal.
Yeah.
Write it all down. And then 7 days. It includes the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Then we come in and we look at it. And we have a in-body scanner, which is like a body scan device that, you know, it does all the things.
Yeah.
And what it eventually gets to is your basal metabolic rate, which is the, you know, it does all the calculations based on all the scan. Tells you the amount of calories that your body burns by being a human in a day.
Right.
I'll take that number. We'll scan them and I'll take that number and we'll look at the journal and I'll go, see that number? It's the lunch?
Yeah. That was
that number. And they usually go, holy shit. And I'm like, yeah, you kind of need to spread that out over.
Yeah.
Like you can't eat 2 hamburgers and large fries and, you know, multiple drinks.
Right.
Like you need to make that last the whole day. Like that's step one.
Yeah, but Gene, I can out train it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what did you tell me when a couple of years ago I told you I train so that I can eat. Maybe you didn't tell it. Maybe my wife did. But basically it doesn't quite
work that way.
Like, you know, Sunday I burn, you know, 1,100 calories running 8 miles.
Now if you run 8 miles or 12 miles every day,
then
It's gonna catch up to you.
It is.
That's why marathoners look the way they do.
Right. Exactly.
But they are probably underfed for the amount of calories their body is burning through.
At a certain point, that has
the opposite effect. And probably, I don't know. I haven't studied it. Peter T. will probably tell you it has the same effect.
Yeah.
In the end.
Right.
In terms of you're using your body too much. Yeah. Like there, you can go too far.
Yeah.
And like burn yourself out.
All right.
You ever seen an ultra marathoner?
Yes, I have.
They're skinny.
Yeah. Well, no. Ultra marathoners actually.
Well, sometimes
they look like normal humans because
they don't
run.
If you're an ultra marathoner, don't get mad.
Yeah.
But most of them don't actually run the whole distance.
That's true.
they walk it mostly.
Yeah, it's a 10 minute mile. Like,
take pictures and hang out.
There's an ultra marathon in
drink beer and
Harbison this past weekend.
Yes,
and this dude that you know become friends with on Strava, Strava.
I don't know
what the fuck it's called. Anyway, like he did it this weekend, 6 hours, 31 miles. I don't even know if that's how long you're like if that was the whole. It was. I think he did Harbison four times, and we've done Harbison.
Yeah.
And this dude is probably like 6'3", 6'4", and he's, you know, fairly well built dude. I'm not Taylor, if you're out there, sorry, I'm talking about you, but you know, his wife just had a baby. So, you know, he's just itching to get out and
like a 14 minute mile.
Well, he's like, hey, you want to run with me? And I'm like, and I looked at his stuff. I'm like, nah. Oh, you're doing like 8 miles at a time. I'm like, fuck no.
Nope. I'll do one.
But then I ended up doing it. I'm like, eh, not so bad. Because he's doing like a 10 minute mile while he's doing that. I'm like, oh, well, if that's it, then that's not as bad as what I thought it was going
that's
to be.
That's a fast mile, brother.
Or an ultra marathoner, it is, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. So, and the marathon runner that I met, like, he was definitely like, you know, like compact body and everything.
Right.
But the ultra marathoners that I know, they're, you know, I don't know, because they are, walking, running, logging. Anyway, what was the point of that?
The point is we have one more section here. There's a lot. I mean, we could make this like a 3-hour podcast, but the last thing I wanted to touch on, though, was emotional health.
Oh, no.
What?
That's not the most important thing in this book. It's exercise, eating, and sleep. Sleep
affects. Well, the last bit there.
Yeah, sorry. I'm not looking at this.
That's okay. You're right.
Off a brain.
You're right, but don't skip me.
Okay.
Emotional health.
I'll come back to it.
And there's a lot of talk about, you know, therapy and things like that now. And I think that's so important.
Yeah.
Because we, you know, especially as men too, we just don't do that sort of thing. Yeah. And you know, protecting your emotional health, it's almost as important as your physical health. Mm-hmm. Probably on the same level, honestly.
Yeah.
Working on those things around you in your environment, not just your own health, your own physical health.
Well,
if you're not happy, why would you want to live a long time?
True.
It's one of the.
And that's why now I know that it wasn't in the Alzheimer's part, but it was actually in here that he was talking about the people breaking their hip and everything pulls them into depression, or at least
that's where, we're touching on that a little bit.
That, you know, yes, you know, that makes you not want to do any of the other things that are preventative. Because,
well, something I see, it's simple in older people, they can't hear as well.
Oh yeah.
So they don't communicate anymore because they're embarrassed by the fact that they can't hear you.
Right.
And it just spirals into them not interacting with people. Mm-hmm. When simply getting a fucking hearing aid would probably help. Mm-hmm. We're not going to talk about, like, you know, the boomers, you know, reticence to like get help.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of up to us, I guess, to make our parents do things, but.
No, I'm not even. I'm gonna abstain from that conversation.
But I mean, like,
I've had it plenty of times recently.
Yeah, but it's just something like that. Something that simple. You know, you're not gonna get that perspective on your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, if you're truly depressed or in that state of mind, you're not necessarily gonna pull yourself out of that by yourself with sheer will.
Yeah,
you might need help, and I think the point is that it's okay to ask for help.
Yeah. Yeah, it is
one of the pillars of fitness is your mental fitness.
True. And he tells a very personal story about, I think actually it just like things that happened when he was a kid,
mm-hmm.
put it that way, that got to him later on in life when he had kids and that, you know, he puts it all out there and it's kind of like a, oh fuck.
Yeah.
And that, you know, even saying that I thought that I had beat it and guess what? I had not, and it came back, thing. And those things, we know that mental and emotional there is a mental and emotional health
Yes.
Those are two different things.
They are.
And I think that he says that mental is like, think of that as your brain, and emotional is, you know, how you deal with things. So it's a scientific versus, I don't know,
emotional. Spiritual almost.
So, yeah.
It can be. I mean, I'm not talking religion.
No, but when we talk about mental health, when he's talking about mental health, he's literally talking about the science of the brain. When he's talking about emotional health, it's how to deal with things. And so if your brain has traumatic injuries or something
like that,
then you've got, you know, more issues to deal with there. But also there's the emotional side of things, which are linked to but separate from your mental health.
But it's part of the quadrangle of health.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Did I get that right? Like, what does Mark Divine teach? The five mountains?
Yes.
I mean, they're there. Quadrangle? I don't know. That's four.
Right.
And he's got this, I found this short where he was talking about, and I know you do journaling, but it was an interesting take on how to journaling your failures.
What about this idea of journaling positive experiences as kind of a database?
I like doing that, but what I like doing better is I like journaling negative experiences and learning from them. Here's the way to do it that can really, really change life a lot. I ask my students to keep a failure and disappointment journal. That professor gave me a C on an exam, or the job market isn't turning out the way I wanted it to. There's something bugging you in a big way. Every time, write it down, just write it out. Even if it's stupid, write it down. Then leave two blank spaces, two blank lines under it, under each entry. The first one you come back to after 30 days, set an alarm on your phone. Come back to it and you have to write, what did I learn about this thing in the last 30 days, about that thing? After 6 months, you get another alarm that says, go back to it and say, tell me something good that happened as a result of that. Now, if we don't do that, we won't remember and we won't grow on the basis of this. And then when you start doing this consistently, you'll start looking forward to writing down things in your failure journal. You've converted the negative into the positive. There's no good or bad emotions. There's only information. Just,
you know, a lot of times, and I know you use your journal a little bit differently sometimes, where
sometimes
you don't just write it to get it out of your head and to make it go away. Mm-hmm. You're using that journal as a tool. So you'll go back and reflect on the thing. And that's what he was talking about. So when you have something that doesn't work, write it down. And then I think he said like a month later, come back to it and say, what did I learn from that? What happened because of that?
Yeah.
But then like 6 months later, come back and be like, what am I grateful for? Mm-hmm. Because that thing happened.
Yeah.
And use that tool. That's kind of awesome. I think I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
That's pretty rad. That's pretty fucking rad.
Yeah. But also, you know,
but that is the same as working out to get healthy. Mm-hmm. That is like working out to make your emotions more healthy.
Yeah.
That's how you do that.
And also determining what is important, not important. And I don't know if he goes 100%. Into this, but a month later, if that thing is still important, then it's something to deal with.
Yeah.
But the majority of things that you write down now,
it usually goes away.
Cause like, oh, goddamn, pissed off at this. And then a month from now, you're like,
I don't even remember why you were mad.
Exactly. It was just that, and then you can deal with that. But 6 months from now, if those things are still on the table, you really need to deal with
it. Yeah, that means the scale of that.
But if they're not, most of them they were something that happened in the moment. And, you know, then you need to figure out how to work with you better on dealing with those 100%. Things. And
I like that. That was a cool way to think about it.
Yeah.
So, the last thing, exercise, sleeping, and eating.
Sleep.
We didn't touch on sleep.
Sleep, dude.
But it's important to sleep.
He seems to point towards exercise as the most important thing, but kind of ends with emotional, and then before that, sleep comes after.
Well, sleep can really affect your emotional state.
Sleep affects everything.
It can affect how you interpret things.
Yeah.
I think Matt Frazier, the last year he won the CrossFit Games, he said that like he had gotten his sleep dialed in. Or maybe it's like the last 2 years, whatever. And he was like, that's my secret weapon.
Yeah.
Is I get a lot of sleep.
Yeah.
I train in a sleep, eat in a sleep. And sleeping is super important.
Yeah. And
it is like a secret weapon.
It is.
But it's important to say, not be slothful.
Well, he says that there's a problem with undersleeping, which is what most people do. And he says that there's also a problem with oversleeping.
Yeah.
And so too much sleep will make it so that, you know, you are not functioning properly yeah. as well.
Yeah. Cause
but his whole, and I've said it so many times myself, I'll sleep when I die.
But you got that weird military thing.
Yeah. Because
you just take naps and shit wherever you want.
On a plane.
I have pictures of you like backstage at Commerce is taking naps.
Yeah. I can sleep anywhere. Just my wife is like, what is wrong?
I cannot, but.
But because you, well, I had been sleep deprived since I was a teenager.
Right,
and sure. It never stopped.
Sure.
And then, you know, probably got worse in the military. Yeah. But, you know, I've figured out ways to get myself to sleep sooner. But again, if you ask my wife, she's like, you fall asleep like, you know, that. And I'm like, that's not really true. But I figured out how to do that. And some of the things that he was putting in the book was kind of interesting. Actually, oh shit, what's her name? She has a new late show. I know you probably don't stay up and I don't stay up for it. But it's a comic that's a Tomlinson, not Lily, but,
I don't know who you're talking about.
Anyway, she has a Netflix special and she actually ask people in the audience how, you know,
how they
tell me your weirdest way of getting to sleep. You know, they're like, you know, meditate beforehand.
Yeah.
Anyway, we watched it last night. It was pretty funny. Anyway, I've figured out how to get myself to sleep quicker. And then the whole point is to stay asleep longer. And I've found, it's not only how you feel, but I look at my recovery scores on Whoop and everything.
Yeah.
And the times where I think that I like have screwed it up and not had enough sleep, and it says your recovery score is like 80 or 90. And I'm like, holy shit, it's better than 60, which is what it used to be. Then I started like really focusing and dialing in on sleep. And that 8-mile run that I did on Sunday, and I got like 9 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
Next day I was like, fuck, I'm ready to do it again.
That's cool.
And because, and I'm not, you know, like, and I don't stretch out the way that I should. But you know, I ran, what was yesterday, Monday?
Yeah.
Oh, well, so I ran like, you know, just 20-minute recovery run. It felt totally great. Like I had not, and then I'm normally like second day after a workout, I'm like really, you know, crappy. I feel great today.
That's cool.
And partially because I put, you know, effort into trying to get enough sleep in order to recover right.
It goes a long way.
It does. And mentally too. And, you know, anyway, it's I don't think that enough emphasis is put in on the sleep factor in your health. And
well, you know, let's wrap up here a little bit. Exercise often, sleep well, eat clean. Very simple. Sure. But it seems overwhelming. You look at all of this shit I got to worry about and work on.
Yeah.
But I think the important thing is to just do one. Just do work on one.
Yeah.
Work on the one that's the biggest pain point first.
Yeah.
And just work on it. That's what I see is the lack of people working on any of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you don't have to do it all at one time. Just do one thing and it will go so far.
Yeah. That's true.
You seem like you agree with me, so.
I do, and actually, I would say start with the sleep.
It's the easiest one.
It's
just go to fucking bed.
Yes, no, just go to bed, and then you will have better energy. You should have better energy in the morning, no matter what state of health you're in. So that way, it might be easier to go for a 15-minute walk.
You don't have to be 100% caught up on the newest Netflix shit and Marvel show. You don't.
Is there something new that should be?
There's watching? A bunch, but okay, you gotcha. Don't need to. It will be there forever. Okay.
True.
It'll be there forever.
Yeah.
You can always go check this shit out.
Yeah.
You don't have to stay up till 1 a.m. watching this shit.
And even now with work, like I'm pretty used to pulling all nighters on a lot of things. And lately,
do that anymore.
I know. Well, because you have to wake up a certain time every morning in order to, you know, go and
feed
the chickens.
It'll still be.
Yeah. But what I'm finding is there's a certain point at night to where I'm like, I know that this needs to be done before tomorrow at 10, but you know, I'm going to bed now and then I'm going to wake up early and then I'm going to attack it then when I actually have a better mental state as opposed to now where
better energy.
You know, I've again run, you know, 5 miles and cook dinner and feel like crap at, you know, 10 o'clock at night. Frazier's right. That is my secret weapon now, is
secret weapon.
Really trying to do that. And I, unfortunately though, I get angry when people, you know, waking me back up. But
so you approve of the book?
I put my stamp of approval on Dr. Peter Attia's Outlive book. Yeah, it's
and I agree with Colin Keeley here. It should be under 200 pages and be the best selling book of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I'm not the one thing I would say is I'm not sure who he wrote it for. And I
man,
think
he's a doctor, man.
Well, no, I think what he did is it's written for the general public towards the second and third parts.
Right.
But I think it's written for maybe other medical professionals at the first part. Because
could be.
The truth is like some of the most unhealthy people I know have actually, you know, are actually in the medical
health
field.
Industry. Yeah, for sure.
And you know, he does go into the fact that doctors are not taught anything about nutrition. They're not taught anything.
Well, no, you specialize.
Right. Well, and even then you're taught this goes to the you know, mental health versus emotional health. You're taught about the physiological things and how things work. And that's what a lot of the book, right. You know, the Four Horsemen part with the cancer and everything it talks about. But so I think that he's appealing to medical professionals there to say, here's the science, here are the research studies. And then it finally tails into, and here are the things that might be able to be done in order to help these things. Yeah. And then the second half of the book is, again, it's not very proscriptive, but it is, you know, here are the things with exercise, nutrition, sleep, and mental and emotional health that, you know, you should be dealing with in order to make yourself better and so that you can live to a longer state. And so that's why I say I'm not sure who he wrote it to. The guy's right, 200 pages. But the thing is, like, if you don't substantiate it with the science behind it, then, you know, then everything else is just opinion.
Yeah, it's like, who are you?
Which is every other fucking book that's out there.
100%.
So I approve of it because of that. And I do agree, it would have been nice if it was shorter. But I also feel like I feel somewhat smarter.
You want the shorter version after you've read the longer version.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like I do. Well, yeah. I mean, but that's it, Gene. It's like I read the book or read pieces of the book first, and then I'd go and watch a podcast with him talking about that piece of it.
Yeah.
So that I can get further explanation of the, you know, not really the sound bites, but how do I take that into my personal life?
That's cool.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Everyone should get it. It's a big one, but get it. You can help your sleep. Read a couple pages before you go to sleep every night. Maybe it'll put you to bed. All right, man. Thank you for the book review.
Yeah.
Better you than me.
Yeah, that's fair.